we can see that illuminated sign that marks the end of the journey.
This vaccine will help us get past this pandemic once and for all.
We need people to have faith that this vaccine is safe and that they should take it. The thing that's going to stop us from seeing the end of this pandemic are people going, oh, I'm not so sure.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. Good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. Well, Boris Johnson and Joe Biden heaped praise upon each other as they sought to relaunch the UK-US relationship ahead of the G7 in Cornwall. The Americans called the initial bilateral meeting productive. The Brits hailed it a breath of fresh air. Whether that positive tone will remain as the G7 proper begins and the European leaders arrive today, we shall see. Northern Ireland wasn't raised by Biden, but France's Emmanuel Macron en route to the English coast says there was no way that the so-called Northern Ireland Brexit protocol was up for renegotiation. Still, the G7 do have perhaps bigger fish to fry: vaccines, climate change and dealing with Russia and China. So that's the big issue on the political agenda. But we also today have a special programme for you, because Boris Johnson may be basking in that G7 sunshine now, but only days ago he narrowly avoided a potential defeat in the Commons over the cut to foreign aid, the subject of our programme. A group of rebel Tory MPs, led by the former International Development Secretary Andrew Mitchell, tried to reverse the decision to cut Britain's aid abroad from 0.7% of GDP to 0.5% this year. The rebels weren't able to bring the issue to a vote in Parliament, though, earlier this week. The Speaker of the House, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, though, has called on ministers to offer MPs an effective vote on international aid. Now, the government says aid spending will go back up. They haven't specified a date. The rebels, who want to see that money stay in place, include a number of former prime ministers, Sir John Major, Theresa May and Tony Blair. Of course, Tony Blair speaking to Bloomberg this morning ahead of the G7 summit. He had these words when it comes to international aid.
Right now, at this moment, especially for Britain being on the global stage and taking a leadership position, which is very welcome to see, given the money we're saving, it's not a sensible thing to do.
So, not a sensible thing to do. Well, joining me now to discuss is Dr. Ryan Jablonski, who is Associate Professor of Political Science at the London School of Economics. This is it. The debate is fairly furious, isn't it, amongst Tory MPs and former prime ministers. I suppose, first of all, just how big a cut is this? How big a donor is the UK?
So we have to put this into a little bit of perspective. So one thing to keep in mind is that the UK has already cut its foreign aid budget by about $3 billion as a result of the cut to GDP. So we're already in a very unique position among major donors of being among the only major donors globally that is cutting aid in the midst of a global pandemic. The discussion now is to cut aid additionally by another $4 billion to put us at 0.5% of GDP instead of 0.7. This is certainly a large amount of money, but to put it in perspective, we're looking at well over a $300 billion deficit as a result of pandemic spending. So the savings that the government is talking about as part of this foreign aid cut represent about 1% of that overall budget deficit.
So then, I suppose, why do it in that case? I mean, in 2020, the UK spent some £14.5 billion on aid. The top five recipients, Pakistan, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Yemen and Nigeria. The government argues that, as you say, during a pandemic, we need all the cash at home, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of your listeners will disagree, but in my view, this is political pandering at its worst. There's a reason why it looks from the discussion the other day, as you mentioned, that Johnson does not have a majority in Parliament for this position. And what appears to be going on is the government is looking at polls right now and seeing that, you know, if you go and poll Tory voters in particular, you see that a large, large majority support cuts to foreign aid. So from that standpoint, it makes sense for them to go and cut foreign aid. But there's a little bit of an irony here in that if you ask individuals within the party or within the UK what their priority issues are right now, what do they care about? Right? They care about doing something about the global pandemic. They care about the refugee crisis. They care about the climate. What are the government's primary mechanisms of dealing with these crises? To a large part, it is foreign aid. A large part of the foreign aid budget right now is going to vaccinating the globe, right? We only have 6% of the world currently vaccinated. The UK is a key partner in COVAX and trying to bring that number up. And we really can't open our borders and return to normal until the entire globe is vaccinated, right? This isn't the thing about a global pandemic is it is global, right? You can't just look at what's happening in the UK and think you've solved the problem, right? This is an international effort. And similarly, if we're talking about refugees, we're talking about the climate. The UK is a core global partner in a number of international institutions and a number of partner countries in addressing these issues. And so I think this is really a story about begrudging the water to put your neighbors, put out the fire in your neighbor's house. It doesn't make a lot of effective sense.
I suppose the defence, perhaps, you know, for example, voiced by S. McVeigh, the questions about whether aid is effective at all. I mean, that is an argument that's been put.
Certainly, and certainly there's reasonable debates that can be had about whether aid in certain cases is effective or not. But I think that, you know, we need to be a little bit careful about this debate and that it's easy to frame this debate in terms of, you know, has foreign aid lifted the world out of poverty? Of course it hasn't, right? The amount of money that gets spent on foreign aid is not nearly what would be needed to bring the world out of poverty. But has foreign aid saved millions of lives and vaccinated millions of people and helped to resolve the current refugee crisis by, you know, funding refugee camps in Syria and in Turkey and, you know, helping to resolve the humanitarian crisis in Yemen and the famine going on in Ethiopia right now? Yes. I think it's undeniable that there are lives saved as a result of that money. So I think, you know, we need to separate out a little bit the kind of broader debate about what foreign aid can and can't do and from the debate about whether or not foreign aid does something useful and whether it's an effective use of our taxpayer dollars. And I think that's a very easy case to make that it is currently an effective use of those dollars.
Well, again, I'll put the line around the vaccine. I mean, great deal of credit, you know, it, certainly from some voters, but also from the Tory party being given to the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine development, that was developed partly with government help and government assistance. And that is the main one that a lot of poorer nations are using now and are going to use around the world. And so sort of have heard that argument that Britain actually has given a lot because it's given the vaccine.
Yes, I mean, that's certainly so. I mean, the UK is one of the primary supporters of the COVAX effort to vaccinate low-income countries. And they've already donated about £400 million worth of vaccines. And as you know, one of the big agenda items on the G7 summit today is trying to fund COVAX and distribute more vaccines to particularly low-income countries. And the FCDO, our UK aid agency, is a core part of doing that.
Does the funding bounce back then when the British economy bounces back? As you say, this is money that is given as a percentage of GDP. So if you see a strong recovery, is there hope in that idea that funding will be greater when we recover?
Yeah, there's certainly some debate about this, right? So the way the government has framed their decision to cut foreign aid is in terms of this emergency measure that because of the pandemic crisis, we simply don't have the budgetary means to spend this. And this this gives them a way to cut spending while not, in debate about this, but not violating the statute. So I don't know. I don't want to speculate about whether the government is being straightforward or not with the public about its intention to bring that number back up to 0.7% of GDP. But I think, to reiterate what I said before, the UK is the only major donor to go and cut foreign aid right now. Germany is increasing aid. The EU is increasing aid. The United States is increasing aid because we face a global pandemic. Now is the time we should be increasing aid, not decreasing it.
Let's go on to our special topic of the day. The cut to Britain's foreign aid budget, opposed by a group of Tory rebels in Parliament and by charity campaigners, including Oxfam, ActionAid UK and One Group, which calls it devastating and something that will undermine Britain's credibility at the G7 and around the world. Well, joining me now to discuss is Romilly Greenhill, who is the UK director of the anti-poverty group One, which was co-founded by Bono. Romilly, welcome to the programme.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So, look, Boris Johnson, may have had a strong start to the G7 meeting, but earlier this week, he was facing this Tory rebellion about the cut to foreign aid. You've been very concerned, along with a whole host of other charities, about the impact that this cut is going to have. How devastating will it be?
It's very, very devastating, and we're opposed to this cut for three big reasons. One is it doesn't make sense economically. Secondly, it's very, very bad foreign policy. And lastly, and most importantly, it's having a devastating impact for people around the world. Let me just give you one example. 3 million children will no longer be able to go to school as a result of these cuts. That's empty classrooms up and down the continent of Africa and other low-income regions. So it's really devastating, and that's why we need to see these cuts reversed as quickly as possible.
The government would say, given the pandemic and the hit to the British economy, it's reasonable, if not necessary.
Well, these cuts are only 1%. Sorry, the aid budget is only 1% of the overall deficit. So they're only saving 1% by making these cuts. So really, it's kind of small change in the scheme of things. Remember as well that the aid budget does already go up and down with our income. So, just as if my income goes down, I pay less tax, the aid target is set up so that when our income goes down, we'll be spending less money on aid. So really, this isn't a reason to be cutting aid.
The government says that it's temporary.
Indeed, the government has said they will return to the 0.7% target when the fiscal situation allows. The UK economy is actually doing better than had been expected. Projections suggest that actually by the end of the year, we'll be back at pre-pandemic levels. So at the very latest, we want to see these aid cuts reversed at the beginning of next year, at the absolute latest, because the economy will be back on track by then.
I have heard the argument also, Romilly, that the aid budget perhaps doesn't always go to the right things. Either it's not well spent, or when it is well spent, that it's not really enough to make a dent in global poverty. Is the aid budget being spent in the right way?
So let me give you just two examples. So Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, this organisation has been going for a long time, even before the pandemic, and of course now is centrally involved in vaccine rollout. The UK has been a major funder to this organisation. It has saved 13 million lives around the world, 760 million children vaccinated. So if that's not impact, I don't know what is. Another more personal example, I worked in Uganda some years ago, and I actually saw with my own eyes, children, particularly girls, able to go to school because of the aid money that was being provided by the UK government. It is making a difference to millions of people around the world, and we absolutely need to restore those cuts as quickly as possible.
How much does the cut to foreign aid really undermine Britain on the world stage, which is sort of the accusation or the claim from a lot of charities, including yourselves, especially when you stack it up against what the Conservative Party would argue is the enormous success of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine, you know, partly supported and funded by the British government, by research funds and so on, and one that developing and poor countries around the world are going is going to be the mainstay for them in terms of dealing with the pandemic?
Well, I'm speaking to you from the G7 summit in Cornwall, and I think it's a real problem because the UK government is, we're literally raining on our own parade. In fact, it has been raining really here in Cornwall. But, you know, we are the only G7 country to be cutting aid in the middle of this pandemic. Many of our big partners, you know, countries like Germany, like France, like the US, are making big increases to aid. And we're now going to be fifth out of seven across the G7 in terms of the amount of aid money we provide. This is having a real impact on the way we are seen around the world. And that is going to impact not just our ability to lead at the G7 this weekend, but also our ability to secure a successful agreement at the climate change summit later in the year. I know because I've spoken to negotiators from developing countries. They are really interested by how much the richer countries are prepared to put in their hands in their pocket and contribute money to the really important challenges that we face. And so this cut in aid, the isolation that we feel across the G7 is doing real damage to Britain's reputation around the world.
Romilly, thank you so much for being with us. It's been really great to have you on the programme. Romilly Greenhill is the UK director of the anti-poverty group One, co-founded by Bono, sort of putting the case very clearly, really, for why charities and a lot of Tory MPs have been so against the cut in foreign aid. Well, for a slightly different perspective, the Institute of Economic Affairs put out a report in 2019 about the skyrocketing cost of foreign aid, saying that the money was being spent on nanny state projects abroad, things like tackling obesity and tobacco use. So if the funds are being misallocated, is the IEA in favour of a cut to the foreign aid budget overall? Joining me now is Mark Littlewood, who is the Director General of the Institute of Economic Affairs. Mark, welcome to the programme. Thanks for being with me.
Good morning.
So Tory voters, I mean, the public does support foreign aid, the idea of foreign aid, but actually a lot of Tory voters are not too fussed. They're quite in favour of cutting the foreign aid budget. So, you know, if it makes sense politically, does it make sense for Britain?
Well, I'm less concerned about the political side of it, more concerned about the economic side of it. And it's obviously extremely difficult to put forward an argument for ever cutting foreign aid because it sounds like a rather cruel, nativist, nationalistic thing to do. But if you take a step back and look at the impact of aid over a good number of years, well, to say it has a patchy record would be generous indeed. I mean, don't just take my word for it. The IMF, for example, has found that aid inflows have adverse effects on the recipient country's competitiveness. Research from the World Bank, they looked at aid going into countries from the year 1975-2000 and found absolutely no evidence that it promoted democracy. If aid was really working, over the longer term, I don't just mean for a specific disaster relief, but over the longer term, you'd expect to see the countries that have been the biggest recipients of aid, maybe 3, 5, 10 years later, showing real improvements to their economy. An improvement in the skills of their workforce, their competitiveness, their average incomes and the rest. That simply doesn't happen. So I'm not sure it's a very good poverty relief tool at all. The oddity as well of having a particular number, we're going to spend 0.7% of GDP on aid. I mean, that strikes me as being almost completely arbitrary. If I recall correctly, it comes from some rather obscure UN document from the 1960s. Why 0.7%? Why not 0.5 or indeed 0.8 or 0.9. I think it's very strange and a pretty odd way of deciding your spending priorities to actually have a percentage commitment rather than to reacting to circumstances at the time. You can imagine, God forbid, some natural disaster that needs more money spent on it, but in other years, perhaps less.
Yes, but there are plenty of targets, aren't there, for economic spending? I mean, for example, on defence spending, it's a percentage of the budget or of GDP. But let me pick you up, though, on the idea of, yes, I mean, whether aid works. I mean, the major defence for that is simply that these countries, the top five recipients from the UK, Pakistan, Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Yemen and Nigeria, they are incredibly poor. Many of the people in those countries are incredibly poor, and that the sums of money just aren't enough.
Well, it's a question of whether you believe pouring money at that problem is the best mechanism of poverty relief. I'm highly sceptical about that. As I say, the statistics over a long period of time don't really show that. I think you can make a good case for particular disaster relief. You know, some particular incident happens, you know, an earthquake or a famine or something, or even a war-torn area, where you need to very specifically, sort of right now, get food and water to particular people as a short-term emergency. But over the longer run, the economic evidence is it doesn't work. So then, if you were to look at pouring money into Yemen today, previous experiences don't give you any confidence that that will make the Yemenis richer in 5 or 10 years' time. That's the evidence of aid programs to date.
And Mark, I think we need a different approach, really. Mark, in that case, briefly, why do you think this host of foreign prime ministers has lined up against it, Tony Blair and so on, Theresa May, Sir John Major, and by your argument, we shouldn't spend anything at all?
Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't spend anything at all. As I said, disaster relief, I think, requires some money. But I think there's a sort of rather virtue-signaling guilt about it. My answer to poverty relief wouldn't be to have a 0.7% target on funnelling money individual countries. It would be to liberalise our trade relations with a large number of countries. We're in the bizarre position where we're giving money to a good number of these countries, which, as I say, I'm not confident is well used. Yeah. But we're erecting trade barriers to them as well. We're making it nearly impossible for them to sell us their goods. We're making it probably difficult for them to climb out of poverty through their own efforts.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.